Good midnight to you all. It is now officially October the 29th, 2019. Only a few more days until 11/3. Of course, a crazy-ass German believes that Seattle will be destroyed on November the 3rd. November the 3rd, according to this German dude. According to this German dude, according to this guy, on November the 3rd, 2019, perhaps related to a sporting event, on November the 3rd, 2019, something really terrible might happen in Seattle, according to a crazy German dude. But I don't know that he's crazy. Of course, if Seattle is attacked on November the 3rd, 2019, this will signal the next age, the age of transportal impossibilicus. The time of impossibilicus will transcend all time before and after. Those are the chords of disdain. They're the ultimate chords. Yeah, according to a crazy-ass German dude. If you were to merely go to YouTube and type in German dude, November the 3rd, 2019, Seattle. Even though there's a censor at work on all YouTube systems, for some reason the fear porn around November the 3rd gets through. That's funny. I mean, YouTube will cancel channels left and right, but a crazy-ass German dude is signaling to us that on November the 3rd, terrible shit's gonna happen in Seattle. I don't know, folks. I am of the opinion that there's a lot of bullshit floating about. More bullshit than most would realize or want to admit. On November the 3rd, 2019, a great event will occur in Seattle that will be so amazing. It will unleash the age of the impossibilicus. It will be the next level beyond levels. It will open up the cavern of Tomorrowland. Tomorrowland will open up like a portal to another universe. There'll be really nice people waiting for us there. In fact, they'll send us letters and flowers, little gifties. This other universe will be known as Etheria. In the year 2015, in the year 2015, the Large Hadron Collider punched a hole out of our universe into another one called Etheria. And the first thing we found out is Etheria is beautiful. Everybody gets what they want. There's champagne waterfalls and whiskey lakes and cigarette trees for everybody. So now there's this hole to Etheria, and everybody can go through. The only thing you have to do, there's just one thing. In order to transcend the next level on November 3rd, 2019 in Seattle, if you want to go to the next level on November the 3rd, 2019, if you want to transcend your earthly bullshit and reach a whole nother plane of existence in Etheria, where there's busty women for every man that wants one, where there's beautiful grungy lesbians that don't shave their legs for every lesbian that wants one, and in Etheria, every gay man gets a power bottom, or a twink, or a grizzly bear, depending upon their desire. You will travel to Etheria through the portal at the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland. You arrive in Switzerland and you get off the massive trains being used to ship people there. Millions of people are flooding. They're going to Switzerland to travel through the fucking hole. Everybody wants to get to Etheria now. The government tells us that the atmosphere of the Earth is collapsing. You are now on the escalator heading upward toward the next level. You are approaching the main gateway. You have your backpack filled with chocolate bars and all kinds of strange fucking bullshit. The man at the gate checked your pass, your orange pass 3. That means you get to wait a while. And as you're waiting to travel to Etheria, you look around at all the people crying and sobbing. Finally, they have hope. No hope to be found in Jesus, of course, because, what, you know, Jesus doesn't exist. No hope to be found the Lord in heaven. Nope, that's not true. No hope to be found Hinduism or Zen Buddhism. Any kind of fucking earthly detachment process. Even the Scientologists let people down. And the Mormons are nowhere to be found. And the Hebrews have been gone a while, buddy. You look around the waiting room, the gateway waiting room to go to Etheria. You look around this hallway. You look around the people sitting next to you. They're all waiting to go to Etheria. All Orange Pass and Blue Pass, head to the gate. Head to the gate now. And now you're so fucking excited. You get in line and there's two people ahead of you. And you get a mere glimpse of what's coming. A flash of light. As if a door were being opened to this impossibilicus world of Etheria, where every desire is fulfilled, where everything becomes beautiful and loving, and you never have to worry about anything again, because shit, why would you have to? You're next in line. Something weird just happened. The person ahead of you gave you a look. That kind of look you get, maybe, if you're fucking a pig or a cow waiting to be slaughtered. As if the cow ahead got the true glimpse. As if the cow ahead saw the man with the hydraulic piston gun. She was a beautiful young woman that looked back at you before she left, before she went to Etheria. She had a tear rolling down her eye, towards down her cheek. And you're next in line. And you're going into the chamber to be sent to Etheria, but it's a little weird, it's a little smelly, it's really kind of a strange little chamber. From behind you, you can feel the grip of something. You don't know what it is. It doesn't sound like the propaganda they told you about. They told you that this would be sanctuary. They told you this would be a safe place for you. They told you the earth was collapsing, that God abandoned you. Come to Etheria. Believe it or not, folks, that's a short story I have not written yet. I have been sitting on my ass a lot in the last few months of my temporary retirement. And I'm not going to tell you I feel guilty, because that would be kind of a lie. I actually don't. If I had kids, if I had a cat, if I had any creature that really depended upon me making any additional money to purchase some type of shelter or water or food, yeah, I would deserve your rebuke. But I'm a 50-year-old white man, white straight man, living in Seattle, who carries the guilt of every crime of history, at least according to the professors that teach up the block at Seattle University, and the Jesuits, who own the place. And I hate Jesuits, just FYI. But the story of Etheria is a weird one, because in a way, it's a joke. Everyone, not everyone, that's not correct. It's past midnight and my brain is a little loopy. There are people in your life, and I would even say more likely people you do not know. There are people you don't know, and maybe even demons. I know that that word's a little creepy, and I know some of you think I'm joking. Yeah, I am and I'm not. Once you go down the road of having faith in an all-powerful supernatural being, you kind of have to be willing to accept a lot of shit that, frankly, you used to make fun of as a hyper-rational atheist, like demons and ghosts and shit like that. And if somebody says to you spiritual warfare, in the past I would have told you that's creepy-ass bullshit. Of course, that would have been 10 years ago. Now, when I look at the world today, these things that seem impossible, that seem strange, that seem bizarre, actually seem empirically and absolutely certain. There are people who will come along in the years to come, and it could be very soon, folks. It could be very soon. Who will make promises like Etheria. They will promise you a paradise. And frankly, it's not that complicated. Etheria is Marxism. Etheria is fascism. Etheria is the Federal Reserve. Etheria is any institution or person that comes along and promises you a lot of fucking bullshit. Now, you guys can make fun of God all you want to, but I'll tell you something. God never took from me anything that I did not lose. That means that if shit happened to me in my life, I would be an asshole to blame God for it. Although I know a lot of people, especially people that write for Hollywood, love to sneak in things like somehow war, and I would even add cancer, are things we need to blame on God. No, I kind of think Babylon needs to take some responsibility for its evil too. There are going to be people who come along and they will make these promises. They will tell you, believe in me, and everything will be okay. I frankly think that the next big hero, quote unquote, for America is going to be Tulsi Gabbard, because frankly speaking, she captures every single factor of what makes a great political actor at this point in human history. She appeals to people who are into the whole social justice warrior bullshit. She appeals to people who are into the minority identity politics. She appeals to women who are feminists. She appeals to military folks, because even though she's quote-unquote anti-war, if you haven't noticed, she hasn't resigned her commission. So, yeah, she pretty much appeals on a very superficial level to a lot of fucking interest groups. And she's on the young side. And frankly speaking, she's not unattractive. So if you put all that shit together, you actually have a kind of torpedo candidate, a lot like Obama. All you gotta do is fire that fucking torpedo and have enough juice behind it. People are going to come along, like politicians, and they're gonna make these promises to save your life. And the only thing they're gonna ask in return, the only thing they're gonna want from you, is your commitment to the lie. That's all they'll want. They'll want you to commit yourself to the lie. And at first it'll be like, well, this is no big deal. Because frankly speaking, folks, people make fun of the slippery slope, but that's kind of how the state works. You know, people mock Social Security, saying, if you do Social Security, it's the mark of the beast. And then back then it was like, well, holy shit, that's stupid. Are you kidding me? Mark of the beast? What kind of bullshit is that? Looking back, folks, I gotta be honest with you. It looks like that's what happened. It's not like it's an option, okay? It might be an option for the crocodile to whittle away at your benefits over time. That's definitely an option. But it's not really an option to not participate. So the people that mocked it and said it was like the mark of the beast shit, I think they turned out to be correct. But that's the point. With the crocodile, it's not measured in weeks or months. It's usually measured in decades. And these things don't happen overnight. And we can talk about the parable of the boiled frog all we want to. But boiled frogs, I don't know if they have consciousness. I don't know if they have reason. And I'm pretty certain God did not ensoul them. So this whole boiled frog thing's a little bit weak from my perspective, too. And it's a little bit of a fucking cop-out. Okay? People knew what they were getting into. People knew what they were giving up. This whole thing that they didn't know, oh, they didn't know. When they brought the Federal Reserve into existence, people didn't know. You know what? People liked the easy money. People liked the magical free economics. People liked the fact that you could have these massive fucking bubbles. And yeah, they would crash, and then, oh, Bernanke comes along and solves the problem. How do you keep a bubble from crashing? You never let it deflate. And of course, that makes perfect fucking sense. I mean, you think about the universe. The universe is the ultimate bubble. It has been, if you believe in the purely secular theory of things, the universe is the ultimate bubble. It has been expanding for, I don't know, what, 10 billion years? Plus or minus? Maybe 11 billion? The point is, it's this expanding bubble. And yeah, probably, if there's any logic to the universe, eventually it's all going to kind of dissipate or collapse upon itself. But, you know, the laws of thermodynamics being what they are, a process toward entropy, total disorder, which means a big lumbus of nothing. I'm a Christian. I believe in God. I mock God in that little bit about Etheria because that's what they're going to do. And here's the thing, folks. One of the things that tilted me towards Christianity was the fact that Christians were being attacked. And I don't mean the TV Christians, the BMW Jesus, the folks that are trying to convince you that if you send them money on Sunday morning, you're going to become a millionaire because Jesus loves millionaires. That's not what I'm fucking talking about. I'm talking about actual Christians. And believe it or not, they're rare these days. I found a church. It's not a perfect church, but I'll tell you one thing. It's a church, and it has a pastor. And the pastor is real. And he's not promising BMW Jesus. What he's trying to do is to be a good shepherd, which he is. But there are going to be people, unlike my pastor, who will come along and they will not be good shepherds, but they will pretend to be. And they are going to make offers that you cannot refuse. And it'll be big, folks. I don't know what form it'll take precisely, but it will be big. It'll be go with door number one or door number two. And if door number one is basically, don't take my magical help and you're all going to die, and door number two is, take my magical help, but you kind of have to adopt the one world religion and we need one world government, and yeah. And I got to be honest with you folks, most people that have kids, if they're confronted with this, if they're given, if CNN and Fox News and the president all tell us that it's door number one or door number two, especially if it's Trump, you know, they used to joke and say only Nixon can go to China. I think only Trump could probably usher in a kind of police state apocalypse, a horrible, horrible, nightmarish dystopia, because a lot of people have been suckered by his bullshit. You don't have to believe in God. You don't have to believe in Jesus. You don't have to believe in any of that stuff. But I do want you to understand one thing. There are grifters and there are con artists everywhere. And every once in a while throughout history, a con artist gets a little bit of power. And I'm just telling you, be careful. Because if they promise you Etheria, if they promise you a paradise, if they promise you a free lunch, and then they tell you that nothing's required of you, you don't even have to be a good person, you could be the shittiest person in the world, all you have to do is obey. All you have to do is get in line. All you have to do is take your little color-coded card down to the grocery store, and if you're an orange card, you get green vegetables. And if you're a brown card, you get the vegetables that aren't so green. And a lot of you people, especially the folks that have kids, are going to go along with this shit. Because it will seem so innocuous at first, and it will literally be a choice between door number one, which is basically some type of salvation, and door number two, which is everybody, you know, dies in some sort of horrible, dystopic, apocalyptic event because we didn't accept the help of the magical, magical grifter. And I think there will be a magical grifter. Because there's already a lot of them. The Zuckerbergs, or as I say, the Fuckerbergs, and the Tim Cooks, and the fucking Eric Schmidts, and the Jeff Bezos crowd. We have magical fucking techno gods already. We live very much, as it says in the Bible about the end times, in the age of Noah. Okay, these are times of giants, folks, in a lot of ways. And in a lot of ways, probably not just since the discovery of oil, but since the discovery of nuclear power and our ability to destroy a city with a single bomb, this is the age of giants, folks. This is like the times of Noah. And you add in genetics, chimera, weird beasts and robots, and all the fucking shit that's going on, this sounds more and more like the age of Noah. Next topic. And I'm sorry I went off on that for a while, but like I said, if I get off my ass, there's a story that goes along with that little fucking Cliff Notes Oregon journey of Etheria. Be careful about promises, folks. Lots of crazy people gonna make easy promises at this point in history. And a lot of people are out on the grift. And say what you will about me, but I'm pretty upfront about it. You don't have to pay for my podcast. You don't have to donate. In fact, if you listen to them and you enjoy them, you've donated your time. And from my perspective, that's payment enough. But if you have the money, I have a Venmo link. If you want to donate some, you can. But am I seeking your money because I'm promising you eternal wealth? I don't have a power system. I don't have a pyramid distribution scheme. I don't have a, direct sale, management quorum gimmick. I don't have any reverse vampire contracts. I have none of that shit. I have no land to sell you in Florida. Even though I'm sure Florida's fine, I don't have it. I have for you the expression of the consciousness of a middle-aged, burned-out computer programmer who thinks about the world sometimes. That's it. Anyways, next topic. I had a conversation podcast this morning. Excuse me, yesterday. Now it's yesterday. It's yesterday once more. Boo ba doo ba da. No, we don't need to sing that song, Dan. We don't need any carpenters. So I had a conversational podcast with one of my listeners named AJ from Florida. And it was awesome. The only thing bad about it had nothing to do with him. Basically, I'm still working out the kinks of how I'm going to do this whole, little Saigon hobo interview of people remotely. And I might end up settling on Discord or Skype. I'll be honest with you. I'm gonna do a little bit of research. I've just been so fucking lazy. It's not something I'm not proud of it. But anyways, if there was anything bad about the podcast, is that I decided to do it like old school, like record from his phone, on speakerphone. And it's not like it didn't work. It basically did mostly as I would have expected. And so it's not a throwaway podcast at all. I think it's a really interesting one. But it's also good because I learned something. I learned that, yeah, this is an area of improvement. If I want to interview people remotely, I'm going to have to get that shit worked out. That's the honest to goodness truth of it, folks. That's the truth, the bottom line, as they say on TV. If you don't know, the main topic of this podcast had to do with this notion of the abstract dam, and that's Delta Alpha Mike dam, as in like hydroelectric dam, shit like that. And the notion is this, that what if the best solution to power storage for things like renewables, like solar, wind, etc. What if the best way to store that energy isn't in a battery per se, like a lithium battery or one of these batteries that, frankly, from a fabrication perspective, folks, from fabrication, that's the key. It's not high tech versus low tech. It's what can you fabricate out there in the world if all these logistical systems break down? What can you construct? If you're looking at the problem from the perspective of, well, I have a 3D printer, Dan, and I'll just use my 3D printer, I think you're wrong. Your 3D printer is a complicated piece of technology. And while it may be capable of fabricating all kinds of shit, there's one thing a 3D printer can't make: more 3D printers. So when you're looking at the world in terms of what you're going to do to respond to events, and specifically, if you're a maker, if you're someone out there like AJ that goes around like you like to build stuff, and you're a bit of a prepper, I think you need to ask yourself, what is the most likely solution, the one that is going to be most successful given limitations on access to high technology? Because I'm sorry, these systems will break down. Fry's electronics will get cleared out pretty fucking fast. And so, yeah, if you're hoping to steal all the lithium batteries from Fry's, I hate to break it to you, but somebody already thought about that, and someone's already going to drive a truck down there. In fact, probably the employees have thought about that. So the conversation with AJ was mainly about this. How can you store energy? And who knows how much energy? How can you store a lot of energy for a long time without power loss? And frankly, even hydroelectric dams aren't perfect because water does evaporate. So if you simply filled a reservoir with water and there was no feed, okay, it simply was there, it would eventually dry. It would dry up. It would go away, and you would have no energy. So even a hydroelectric dam suffers from the defect of you have to have refill. But what if, in fact, you could abstract out a dam? And I know I've spoken about this before, but I thought it was worth talking about again in the context of the conversation this morning with AJ. An abstract dam, in the simplest sense, would be the following: some kind of heavy weight. And if you want to, you can either use a tower for this or a well, essentially. But some type of heavy weight that is in a well or being suspended from a tower that has, you know, a distance of traversal, perpendicular to the center of gravity, meaning that it is a traditional well or traditional tower. It is completely balanced, and the weight itself is suspended from a cable over a pulley, and the cable is connected to a gearbox and an alternator. And the concept is this: if the weight, and let's assume it's a well. Like, let's assume you're in the desert, and you basically dug a well that was like 100 feet deep. Or you had one. Holy smokes. Let's say you had a dried out well, because holy fuck, this would be a good use for a dried out well, folks. And even if the well refills, if you do this right, it won't matter. But yeah, let's say you have a really deep well, and it's dried out. Well, what you would do is you would have basically a little structure with a pulley, with a cable heavy enough not just to hold the weight, but to hold it for decades. You gotta think in terms of decades here. You don't think in terms of weeks and months. Once the weight is at the top of the well, you could consider that fully charged. And as the weight goes down the well, it pulls on the pulley, which pulls on the gearbox, which drives an alternator, which produces electricity. So actually, it could be a very useful way of delivering on-demand electricity from a storage, and irrespective, really, of temperature or anything else. And if you design it right, something like that can keep its charge, basically, for all practical purposes, for centuries. If you design it right, but at least for decades. Anyways, it was a really good conversation with AJ. I think and I hope he gets a chance to experiment with this stuff. He seems like he enjoys doing this kind of work. And I'm hoping that we have other podcasts that deal with what I would call the boundary region between technology, science, and shit that people have to get done. Because from my perspective these days, it's about food, water, shelter. And it would be nice to have extras that facilitate this. But to be blunt, if things go really sideways, extras aren't going to be the priority. But if you had some land someplace and you literally had a well that was dried out and there was no, and frankly, if you do this right, like I said, if it's a heavy enough weight and cable, it really wouldn't matter if it filled with water. You would still probably have enough weight and tension to drive it. But the point is, if you had a dried out well or even a cliff, like let's say you live near a cliff, you could have the pulley and the weight over the edge of the cliff. And it would literally just, as it goes down, it's releasing energy. As you pull it up, it's charging. That is the simplest fucking battery you're ever going to build. With the right gearing, with the right cable, with the right weight, with the right structure suspending the pulley, that is the simplest fucking battery you will ever build. It is literally an abstraction of a dam. Now, does it solve every single problem? No, it doesn't. And also, as it discharges, you still have to do something with that power. And you've got different options. One option is to basically use an alternator. So you're using the alternator to charge it, you know, in sort of motor form as you raise the weight. And then as it releases, it becomes a generator. And if you design it around alternators, think about it. Let's say you designed it around the most common alternator you'll find in the U.S. That could be pretty smart because there's going to be a shitload of cars with alternators that basically will have no other purpose but to sit there. But if you're smart and you design this abstract dam, this kinetic battery, really it's a potential energy battery. If you design it right, you design it around these alternators, and better yet, design it around the lowest, the lightest weight vehicle manual transmission that's most common. If you design it around those two things, then you've got basically most of your gearbox and most of your drive done. If you can deconstruct those two things. Anyways, I don't want to spend all day on this because it was a really good conversation. I'm hoping to have AJ back, especially once I get my tech shit fixed. And I'm hoping we're going to talk about things like, I want to talk about like railroads. I think that there is a future for railroads if we make it through this strange time ahead. And I think there's a way to reinvent the railroad in such a way that it's less, you know, this kind of tyrannical bullshit. And then I also thought there were other potential topics too that we would cover around alternatives to quote-unquote traditional weapons. I shouldn't say traditional. Actually, maybe the rediscovery of traditional weapons in a modern context given what's happening with the Second Amendment. Like archery, for example, and black powder. And, you know, some other issues like, hey, wouldn't it be cool to fabricate a cannon? Like, what is the biggest cannon you can build legally? I don't know, but that's an interesting question. Is there still a state in this country where a person can fabricate or construct a black powder cannon? Because really, if you're the deep state and you've got all these, you know, hypersonic missiles, what the fuck do you care if some Americans have a cannon? I don't know. This hour of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Forget About It. Forget About It of Little Saigon is one of the best Italian-Vietnamese fusion restaurants in Seattle. At Forget About It, that's Forget About It. At Forget About It, you can have marinara on your pho. You can have the sausage pesto. There's a brand new chicken parmesan pho. It's kind of tasty. Forget About It of Little Saigon, Seattle has been a fixture of Little Saigon since 1975. During the last war of the Gambinos and the various Italian junket tribes of the Italian district in Seattle back in 1973, the various junket tribes and Gromulan gangs, the pirates of the old mafia, Marty LeBrook. They used to call him Chainsaw Marty. Marty LeBrook wanted something different, but he was in hiding. He was in hiding in Little Saigon. He'd gone to the mattresses, as the mob would say. And while Marty, Chainsaw Marty as his friends called him, was in hiding, he fell in love. He fell in love with who he thought was Sue Lee, but she was really General Chang of the North Vietnamese Special Forces Lesbian Love Woman Love Army. General Chang wasn't really lesbian. She was bi. Bi curious. She wanted to get to America because all she ever wanted to do was open a little fuss shop. She thought it would be so fucking cool to do. So when Sue Lee, aka General Chang, met Marty LeBrook, aka Chainsaw Marty, they fell in love. They created their own Italian Vietnamese fusion. If you know what I mean, you fuck. Of course, I haven't had sex since 2013. And given what I'm doing right now on this Monday night, it's unlikely that I'll have sex in the future without paying for it. But I'll be honest with you. Once you've been married and divorced, you know, just like Marty LeBrook, aka Chainsaw Marty, just like General Chang, aka Sue Lee, once you've been married, you know that everybody pays for it. The man pays for it. The woman pays for it. Everybody pays for it. So in 1974, Sue Lee and Marty decided to open Forget About It. Yeah, you can go to other Italian-Vietnamese fusion restaurants in Seattle, but I don't know where the fuck those places are because that sounds like some kind of special bullshit. If you go to Forget About It, don't forget about asking for the special sauce. Ask for the Dr. Freckles special. Ask for that little extra kick. I can't prove this, but if you expect to be drug tested, don't get the special sauce. Don't ask about the Dr. Freckles special, because I think it contains some yayo. And that's cocaine. But truly, folks, if you're looking for a place to take your date, male or female or whatever gender it is, if you're looking for a place to take your parents, if they're visiting you in town, they wanted to see you at the Jesuit University of Seattle. Want to see, hey, how you doing at the Jesuit University of Seattle? Are you learning things from those fucking Jesuits? Take them to Forget About It. Listen, Marty has been a member of the Knights of Columbus since 1961. Forget about it. Next topic. And I'm going to be blunt about this one. I'm going to be blunt like a dirty, nasty, rusty knife you found in your drawer in your shop. A knife you used to do something ghastly in the darkness about 25 years ago, but you've forgotten about it. You found it in the drawer of your shop today, covered in dust and grime, but the cakes of blood and viscera and hair are still on it. You did something horrible, so horrible you'll never admit it to your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or the mungus freaks that live down the street. Here's the deal, folks. If you purchase something at the store and you have to pay a tax, that sucks. Taxation is theft. Taxation is bullshit. Period. Like, if you go and you buy yourself a brand new TV, and you see that you have to pay some brand new fees, and the fees are terribly shitty, and it's bullshit, there's like 50 kinds of taxes on things. There's the federal LCD TV tax, the governmental up-the-butt, you-get-to-watch high-definition TV tax. There's a we're-gonna-fund local stations so they can produce high-definition TV tax. All the taxes go to the same fucking crocodile. But if you go buy your TV set at Best Buy, if it's still a thing, or Fry's Electronics, while it still exists. And by the way, I love Fry's. Of the many things that are being destroyed by Amazon, Fry's Electronics is one of those things I'm going to miss. And in the great race between the destruction of Fry's by Amazon and the collapse of human civilization, I'm not sure which horse wins that race. That's an interesting side topic for another day. If you go to the fucking store and you buy yourself a TV set, you may very well pay a lot of stupid fucking taxes. But that's it. You take your TV home. Endo. Yeah, it might break, it might be a piece of shit. A lot of the crap coming from China is crappy and poisonous. Be careful, don't eat it. But that's it. If you go and buy a car, it gets a little different. You go buy a car, and pretty much anywhere you live, you have to license the car. If you don't license the car, they take it away. Depending upon where you live, you have to have car insurance, at least liability, or they take your car away. This means that you don't really own your car. I'm so sorry that no one fucking told you this. I mean, of course, you could buy your car, and you could park it on your farm, and you could drive it around your hobo property if it's a couple acres, and that could be really fun. But in order to drive it on a road, you'll have to get the fucking insurance. You'll have to get the license. And oh, by the way, cops are so fucking corrupt now, there's a very good chance they'll come to your fucking house. They'll see you driving it on your property, and they'll fucking take your car anyways. The point is this. If there is a tax on something you own, that if you stop paying the tax, your shit gets taken away, then you really don't own it, do you? Most places, and I would say pretty much everywhere in the United States, you pay some type of property tax. Now, there might be places where you don't, but truly, they're probably pretty remote. They're probably these old land grant properties, like that fucking situation a few years ago in Oregon. And in those cases, the feds will roll in with their tanks eventually and just kill people. I mean, I'm sorry, but the crocodile, when it decides to, will just kill people. But here's the deal. Most places I know about have property taxes, and I don't want to get into the whole, if you don't pay the property taxes, the teachers don't get paid, and then the kids don't go to public school. And somehow, I don't see that as a tragedy. You're telling me the kids won't be indoctrinated and pummeled with lies and bullshit. That's not a tragedy, folks, to me. But here's the bottom line. Pretty much anywhere you live in this fucking country, you're going to pay a property tax. And oh, by the way, if you stop paying that tax, your home will be taken away. You don't own your home, folks. You think you do, but you don't. There is no difference. If you bought a home in Seattle and said, I'm so smart, I bought myself a fucking home, and you own your home, you just have to pay property taxes, but your husband and you lost your jobs. And your property taxes are due. And I hate to break it to you, the crocodile, Democrat, Republican, doesn't give a fuck about you. So it doesn't care if you lost your job. It doesn't care if you have cancer. If you do not pay your property taxes, it will take your fucking home. So tell me again how you own your fucking home. You don't. You really, really don't. I'm so sorry to break this to you, but there is zero difference from a legal perspective between renting a home in Seattle and buying one. There really is zero. Because in both cases, if the final property owner, the final person that holds the deed, does not pay their fucking property taxes, that property gets liquidated. That property gets sold off. That property goes to foreclosure and whatnot. It goes to all kinds of places. But the point is, if you can't pay your property taxes, you are fucked. And I shouldn't have said foreclosure just now because that's not accurate. But the point is, if you can't pay your property taxes, your home will be put up for auction. That's what I meant to say. The bottom line is this. Do you really own something? Do you really own something if you have to pay a recurring fee? Because that's what a property tax is, folks. That's what a license fee is. Guess what? That's what all these fees are for doing things. You don't own your business, okay? You rent your business. If you actually owned your business, you wouldn't have to have a fucking business license. Oh, I'm sorry. And if your argument is, oh, the state guarantees that contractors know what the fuck they're doing. Oh, please tell me you're not that fucking stupid. The state takes a cut of the action. The state makes money. The state does not give a fuck if a contractor knows what the fuck they're doing as long as the fucking contractor pays their fucking licensing fee. That is the truth. A lot of highly certified people, highly certified, highly recommended, highly connected people to the government allowed the opioid epidemic to occur. Okay, these are high-level people. These are PhDs. These are people in organizations, special clubs, special groups. You got to pay fees. And these people poisoned the youth of America, knowing full well what would happen. They're not stupid. Okay, it's not like heroin in any form is a new thing. It might be the case that synthetic opioids are a little bit new, but the basic drug itself has been around for a minute. That's the thing, folks. Whatever you think it is, it's not when it comes to your ownership situation, when it comes to your home, when it comes to your car. If you're paying this recurring fee, you do not own it. And until you accept that, you're going to be living in a magical bullshit reality. And you will continue to participate in these real estate schemes because they really are schemes. If at the end of the day, you cannot pay your property taxes and your property gets taken away, it's not property. It's a scheme. It's a way to make money. It's like renting a boat to go fish. Oh, you can't pay the money for the boat? Well, guess what? The boat's going to stay at the docks. You won't get to go fish. That's essentially what we've turned housing into. Each house is its own little magical fishing boat. And so if nobody wants it, the banks tie it up. And that's why when you drive up and down Rainier Avenue, you see abandoned houses. And that's why when you drive around the Central District, you see abandoned houses. That's why when you drive around the urban blight of this country, you see lots of abandoned houses with nobody living in them and lots of homeless people. Holy fuck. I wonder if these things are connected. But the bottom line is this: if you think you own your home and you live in a place where you have to pay a fee in order to be in your home without being taken away, you do not own your home. I'm so sorry, and if I'm the first person who told you this, believe me, in the years ahead, you're going to learn it. You're going to learn it really well, because if this system does stay together, it's going to get meaner and more corrupt, not less. And it's way more likely, as it drifts towards some type of fucked up, quasi-socialistic, oligarchic dystopia, that people come by and start just taking shit from you. And you'll say, "But wait a minute, I thought I owned this." And they will laugh at you. "Oh, you thought you owned this? What, you think you live in America?" Next topic, because I think I beat that one to death. And perhaps the last topic for this podcast. So I'm going to make a little mark here. Make a little mark. A while back, I think maybe a year ago or so, could be almost a couple years ago now, Pope Francis, and I think he's a Jesuit, isn't he? I think he's a Jesuit. He's definitely he of the many things Pope Francis enjoys, and I think this is on his my pro I think this is on his profile on Facebook. Of the many things Pope Francis enjoys, he enjoys covering up for bishops and priests that abuse children. And if you're a Catholic and you listen to me and think Dan's anti-Catholic, in my own fucking defense, I was raised Catholic. From a ethnic perspective, the fact that I'm a Protestant makes me an oddball. But I will tell you this much: I do not like the papacy. I think there are plenty of Catholics out there who are probably Christians. I'm gonna wager this because I just have to believe that in my heart. But the church itself, the church in Rome, the Pope, that's a lot of Roman pagan bullshit. And I think until people realize that, they're gonna get suckered. It's a lot of Roman pagan bullshit. Anyways, a couple of years ago, a minute ago, Pope Francis said there was no devil. He did. He literally came out and said, "There's no devil, there's no devil." He made a pronouncement. And there was some hullabaloo, blah, 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 people going gnashing their teeth and shaking their fists and saying, "How can you do this?" And so a few weeks later, I think, maybe even a few days later, Pope Francis walked it back. He said, "Well, you know, there's actually a devil." Now, I'm going to tell you guys something. I am an anarchist, which means that I don't believe in bullies, I don't believe in force, I don't believe people should go around torturing and killing each other. I do believe in self-defense as a corollary to the above, which means that if you believe that every human being has a right to their own dignity, a right to their own self, a right to their own destiny, then it kind of makes sense that they have a right to fucking defend themselves. But life has consequences, folks. And if you were the Pope in Rome, in, let's say, the 14th century, and at one point in the 14th century, there was more than one pope. Good old 14th century crisis. Yeah, A Distant Mirror, Barbara Tuchman. Highly recommend that one right about now. Anyways, if you were a pope in the, let's say, the 13th century, before the 14th century crisis. Let's say in the 1250s, you're a pope. And you came out and said there was no devil, you would probably be dead within about 5 minutes. It's not because the church in Rome is good. It's just that they used to have, you know, at least some kind of principles, I think. I mean, there was a limit to what you could say. Even if internally the church in Rome back then was basically satanic, you just couldn't go around saying there's no devil. I don't care that he said it. I don't really care because I don't trust one goddamn thing any pope says. I don't. I don't trust one thing any of these bishops say. I do not trust the church in Rome. But I think it's interesting because I think what he was trying to do is something that, yeah, you know, you would expect the pope to do if these were the end times. I think he's testing the waters. He's, you know, it's why he's gone down the road of trying to develop this kind of Catholicism that embraces Islam and Hinduism and every other religion. It's almost like he's saying true Catholicism is no longer Christian. Like, true Catholicism is essentially to be anti-Christian. And in that sense, you're beginning to see the truth of this pope. The real truth of this pope that we have now, Pope Francis. And when I say we have, he's not my pope. He's not the representative of Christ for anything. I think he's most likely, if he was a representative of some supernatural force, it would be Satan. There's no devil. Oh, there is a devil. How serious of a person could you be? If you're like, let's just pretend for a second that you're a hardcore Catholic and you take that shit seriously. How serious of a person are you as a theologian if 1 minute you can say, there's no devil, and then the next minute, oh, there's a devil? It's almost like the least fucking serious thing you can say. And it, frankly, isn't necessarily, well, I think it's heretical, but one of the reasons why it's even worse than being heretical is that it's making fun of something that is actually intrinsic to the religion. You see, here's the thing I don't know about good old Pope Francis. Does he mock Islam in the same way? Does he mock Zen Buddhism in the same way? Does he mock Hinduism in the same way? Does he mock any other religion in the same way? Does he take a premise of any other religion and say magically one day it's one thing and magically the next day it isn't? That's called mockery, folks. That's good old Pope Francis mocking Christ and mocking God and mocking the truth of the Bible. Anyways, before I end this wonderful podcast this morning, because technically it's 1 a.m., holy fuck. It's 1 a.m. on October the 29th. All of the hordes are asleep now. The streets are quiet. They're quiet at this time of day. The only noise you hear on 12th Avenue is the ram-tam, rattle, blah, blah, blah of the rat garden. Hundreds of rats live in the rat garden next door. You could say that it's a monstrosity. You could say that our lives are becoming nothing but a kind of recurrent regret of a lost dream of a childhood hope that you had once. It's never going to be fulfilled. The rats of Little Saigon, they own the early morning. They have infrared vision. They can smell a weak human from 10 miles away. If you're wandering the streets of Little Saigon at the wrong time of day, and you fall by the wayside, and you scratch yourself, you're injured. So don't trip and fall in Little Saigon. And last but not least, although I think I already said this, if you want to donate, you can. If you don't have money, you shouldn't. If there are people in your life who need money, you should help them first. But if you literally have extra money and you literally enjoy my podcast and you actually think that you want to donate, you should know I appreciate donations. I am technically in between contracts. I don't give a shit. That could be recklessness, but honestly, I don't. But having extra money does help. Anyways, for this Tuesday, I hope you guys go out there and win one for the team.